and 2000 UTC.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the June 23rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. We're now exactly 1 month away from the opening ceremony at the Tokyo Olympics in Japan. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the local fans who are allowed into Olympic venues will face tough new rules. No alcohol, no hugging, no cheering, and no autographs. Keiko Hashimoto, the president of the Tokyo Games, told reporters Wednesday, cited against the selling and drinking of alcoholic beverages at the Olympic venues to prevent the spread of coronavirus infections. Hashimoto says the festivities, in her words, will have to be suppressed to keep the game safe. On Monday, Olympic organizers decided to allow up to 10,000 local spectators into competition venues. The spectators will need to clear several antivirus requirements, including temperature checks and mask wearing, to get into the Olympic venues. And once inside, the fans are not allowed to cheer or make physical contact with other spectators.
Sport greetings, everyone. This is Falilat Ogukoya, Olympic silver and bronze medalist. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on Voice of America.
Team Ghana will be represented by three fighters in the Olympic men's boxing tournament in Tokyo. In this encore feature presentation, let's listen to a report by Yawafusu Larbi, who visited the boxers and their coach at the Accra Sports Stadium.
Ghana's boxers have begun a stringent process of training ahead of the Olympic Games in Tokyo. And here at the DG Hathramani Sports Hall at Accra Sports Stadium, the boxers have been going through training and exercising, getting ready for the task ahead. Kuchu Fuyasari is head coach of the Black Bombers.
Yeah, we are going through the normal training programs. We are only intensifying. We know it has been a long time we won medal at the Olympics, and we wanted to go to this Olympics to bring home a medal. So we are working very hard. It has been from the time that the president released the contact sport because of the pandemic. And we've been consistent up to date at the sports hall. Very soon, if things go as we expect, we'll be going to camp and then keep improving our level. So we are working very hard, determined, and all the boxers are very committed. And they wanted to achieve something for themselves as well as for the nation.
The last time Ghana won a medal at the Olympics was in 1992, which is some 29 years ago. How hopeful are you that there'll be a medal from your team for Ghana?
Hope is we have very talented boxers in terms of Samuel Techi, Suleimanu Tete, and Shakur Sameh. They all have background into boxing, and they are very, very good. They can do everything that others are doing. They know all-round boxing techniques and tactics. All they need is the proper condition in terms of the good food, in terms of good care, in terms of physio. We have doctors around them, psychology, all those things that the international or other countries are doing.
One of the qualifiers, Shakur Sameh, whose older brothers, Basti and Issa, were all Olympians for Ghana, hopes he can get to the Olympic Games and do better than his brothers did.
Although my brothers have achieved a lot, you know, by winning a medal at African level, and even some world tournament, they have, Nanzuna's team, they have won a medal, but they went to, they participated at the 2008 Olympics, I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't win a medal. Yeah. It was only Bastille won only one fight there. Yeah. So I want to make a difference there, you know, by winning a medal. Yeah, I want to achieve something. What they couldn't do, I want to, you know, do that for them.
When you speak about doing what they couldn't do, doesn't that put pressure on you, knowing that, you know, they have walked in the path that you're trying to walk on?
Doesn't put that much pressure on me, because they're always by my side. They stand by me. They always, because they have the experience. They have passed through. So they know what's in. So they always give me a guideline, you know, advising me, giving me a tips, how I'm going to go about it, you know. So although it's not that easy, because I'm going to meet champions. Yeah. I also see myself as a champion. So, yeah. Doesn't put much pressure on me.
It has been 51 odd years since Ghana won a medal in boxing, and albeit being so good at boxing at the professional level, at amateur level, there hasn't been too much to write home about. These boxers want to change it, and one of them is Sam Otechi.
Like I told you, when I'm home, I cannot sleep, because after the country, I'm going to bring good in the country. When I'm home, I cannot sleep. I train hard. I train at my club, I train also here. So I cannot sleep. I must train and bring the gold in my country.
When you say you're bringing gold, doesn't that put pressure on you? Because for a country like Ghana that has never won gold at the Olympics, it is a huge thing to promise gold.
As me, as a good boxer, it didn't bring pressure on me, but it told me to train more, and it told me to do my preparation well. It didn't put pressure on me, but it told me to train more.
I know you are very young, you've been dreaming about this. What would it mean for you?
I look at Olympics 2008, 2012, 2016, and now it's 2020. I look at them always, and you know, I know myself. Every champion knows himself. If a champion said he'll do something, he know what he's standing on it. So I know what I'm standing on it. I know I can do it, and when I'll do it, I must train hard.
My name is Coach Ofori Asare, the head coach of the national boxing team of Ghana. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Coach Asare, a man determined to produce the next boxing greats for Ghana, and has strived in the past 30 years to achieve his goal. His quest to become a professional boxer was not accepted by his parents, but he went on to become a coach.
Because I'm not having the support as I'm supposed to, because my parents doesn't like it. So I have to be doing things humanly. So I decided, okay, to give up. My coach always come and then call me. We arrive at a decision of, okay, come and help me, coach, because I have taught you a lot, and I will not let it go just like that.
To say he is steadfast is an understatement for the man who, after being disengaged from the sports that runs through his blood, didn't let prejudice get in the way of his dreams. Asare's superiors played a huge role in helping him stay focused.
Eddie Duplan, he was the one who brought up the interest of taking me to coaching specialization in Hungary. Ray Kwaku also played a role for me to get the opportunity to go and train myself as a coach's trainer or an instructor.
He has been part of the country's boxing coaching contingent to several international tournaments, the latest being the Africa Games in 2019. Boxing is the nation's big hope. It has given the nation three medals, silver in 1960 in Rome, and two bronze medals in 1964 and 1972. Coach Asare is currently the coach of the Black Bombers and will be leading a team of three qualified boxers to the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games. He hopes everything goes to plan and wins medals for Ghana.
The boxers that we are taking, or this time who have qualified, are also very committed and experienced. A boxer like Suleiman Tete has been to the Olympics Games before. Shakur Sameh is from a boxing family. His father has been a boxer. His brothers has also been boxers. And he's the current SWAG award winner. because of his medal at the All African Games in Samotechi. Based on his commitment, he's able to beat the African number one to get himself qualified. So you will see that the kind of boxers we are having now are boxers who, if we push them a little bit, they can get somewhere.
The country needs to move away from the orthodox way of running the sports if greater glory is sought in the future. And this can only materialize with a supportive financial rock.
Our GBA, GBF, and also those who have been able to work hard to create boxing clubs to allow the new system, new scientific system, to permeate so that we get our old glory back and then we push boxing forward.
The time will come where Asare will be able to look back on a successful professional career with medals and glory. But already, he has paved the way for a future generation to feel accepted in boxing gyms across the capital. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Yaofu Sulabi in Accra.
My name is Shaku Samed, junior brother of Basi Samed Sasame, a light heavyweight at the Ghana national team and an Olympic qualifier. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis, moderator for Issues in the News. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the latest top stories of the week, including the status of a major voting rights bill in the U.S. that Democrats say aims to protect voters' rights and increase election security. Republicans argue elections should be left to the states, not the federal government. Listen to Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Kim. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. It's been 13 years since Nigeria won an Olympic medal on the track. Nigeria's women's 4x100 meters relay team won a silver medal at the 2008 Beijing Games. When it comes to running, Nigeria's best Olympic moments have come at short distances. But what about the longer distances? How can Nigerian athletes improve? That's the question Iron Mike Mbonye posed to athletics coach Chief Tony Osheku.
We don't have cross-country system in Nigeria. Go to US, East Africa, Kenya, Ethiopia, Morocco. They believe in cross-country. And in a country where they don't have cross-country, it will be difficult for them to be very good in long distance. Why? Because like in US now, they start cross-country season from August till November. In November, I'm talking of collegiate cross-country now. Then in November, they'll have like NCAA. Tell me, when you put in the mileage, training for the cross-country, running cross-country, if you put in the mileage, what they accumulate, that will make you a good long-distance runner. But here in Nigeria, we don't have cross-country program, and our high school, they don't participate in cross-country. Until we start doing that, then it means we have a foundation for cross-country. And for cross-country, you'll be able to be a good long-distance runner. So the Honorable Minister is trying to do something about that, how we can improve long distance in Nigeria, what are what we can do. So we have Mediterranean in Nigeria. Nothing is stopping us. We can do it. After all, let me tell you this. When Nigeria hosted All African Games in 2003, many people told the East Africans we are going to win the 800 meters. But there was a big upset. At that Games, I was the national coach, and they asked us, I was the head coach then at the Games, during the Games. They asked us to predict who will win the 800. None of us. We didn't know that Nigeria was going to win the 800. But a big upset, a Nigerian athlete by the name Grace Ebo upset, you know, the East Africans, won the 800 meters. So that gives me, you know, the belief that it's possible for us to have world-class 800 meters runner, world-class long-distance runners, if we have, you know, the system, if we are doing, you know, the right thing. So I'm just sick and tired when people ask you, they ask me, they say, why are we not good in long distance runner? It's possible, but we are not doing the right thing. I know a lot of theories have been attributed to the success, of the Kenyans, Ethiopians. People will say, oh, is it because of genetics? People will say, is it because of altitude? No, we have everything here in Nigeria. It's just we don't have the system.
If properly harnessed, do you see Nigerian athletes competing favorably against Kenyan, Ethiopian, Ugandan long-distance athletes or runners?
Yes, if properly harnessed, Nigerian long-distance runners can compete with the East Africans. They can compete with Moroccans, the North Africans. It's possible. It's just we don't have the structure. If you put the right structure on ground, it's going to take years. We're not going to be in a hurry. It's going to take years. The mentality must be changed. Not that we don't want a situation whereby you have a 10,000 meters runner, you ask him or her to run for 1 hour, 30 minutes or 2 hours during the weekend, and they will say, oh, that's too much. Yeah, for you to be a pure long distance runner, you must be able to run at least 2 hours run during the weekend. But here in Nigeria, when you ask a long distance runner to go for 1 hour, it's like, oh, that's too much on me. So that belief, that mentality must be there. So if we can make this athlete believe that this is what it takes, discipline, hard work, mileage, to be able to cover a lot, then we'll be able to do it. You see, there was a time, what former world recorder Eric Rono told me, he said, look at Kenyans, when you are dominating cross-country at a stretch 17 times, I don't know, maybe I would say 17 years in a row, they won World Cross Country before Ethiopia, stepping, took over from them. He said it was because they were running, they were training three times a day in altitude. Hey, come on, if somebody trains three times a day and that person is talented, so you can't stop that person. You cannot stop that athlete. So here in Nigeria, our Nigerian long-distance runners, most of the time they train once in a day, and you expect them to come and break 28 minutes in 10,000. Our national record is 29 minutes in 10,000. Our men's 5,000 meters record is 14 minutes 15. So it's going to be very difficult if we cannot do the right thing, if you don't have the right structure, making these athletes believe that putting the mileage, hard work, that mentality, that's not going to burn out, then from there, we'll be able to match, the East Africans and North Africans who have been dominating these areas in Africa.
That's athletics coach Chief Tony Osheku. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, the host of the VOA's African Beat music show. On the basketball beat, the Phoenix Suns have taken a 2-0 lead over the Los Angeles Clippers in the NBA's Western Conference Finals. The Suns stunned the visiting Clippers Tuesday night on a last-second basket. The AP's George Tanner reports from the western U.S. city of Phoenix, Arizona.
DeAndre Ayton scored on an alley-oop pass from Jay Crowder with 0.7 seconds left to lift the Suns to a 104-103 win over the Clippers. Ayton finished with 24 points and 14 rebounds, but he says he was quite nervous until the officials said it was a good bucket.
I wasn't too sure if it counted. I didn't want to, be a blooper or none of that. You know what I'm saying? I just wanted to, just get to the next play, or the refs hurry up and, confirm what it is. I was just so anxious. I was really stressed.
Cameron Payne, a career-high 29 for the Suns. Devin Booker, 20, despite a nose injury.
That's just execution at its finest. Took everybody, Jay passing it, DeAndre setting his man up, Coach Monty, you know, believing in them and believing in us to run that. So, you know, it was a big play for us. And anytime you can come out with a win in the playoffs, especially in a close one like that, I think it's big for your momentum.
George Tanner, Phoenix.
Thanks, George. Game 3 in the Suns-Clippers series is Thursday night in Los Angeles, California. Clippers coach Tyronn Lue evaluates his team's performance in Game 2.
Made some adjustments defensively. I thought they worked. I thought we did a great job. Offensively, I just thought so we hurt ourselves, you know, early on, not moving the ball, not making the extra pass, over-dribbled a lot, got down late in the shot clock a lot of times. So defensively, I thought we were great. You know, offensively, it was a little better second half, but first half was really what hurt us.
Meanwhile, Game 1 of the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals tips off later Wednesday night when the Milwaukee Bucks host the Atlanta Hawks. Both teams needed a Game 7 win on the road to reach this point. The Bucks advanced first, getting a 40-point scoring night from star Giannis Antetokounmpo to beat the Brooklyn Nets 115-111 in overtime. And the Hawks spread their wings, getting a 27-point scoring contribution from Kevin Huerter to beat the Philadelphia 76ers 103-96. Talk to us, Kevin.
Just kind of the culmination up to this point, just, you know, the 3 years of guys just working, guys still believing what we're trying to build here in Atlanta and what we're going to continue to try to keep building. It's been a great 3 years, but hopefully the ride is just starting.
Kevin Huerter played college basketball here in the Washington area for the University of Maryland. And after two seasons at Maryland, Kevin declared for the 2018 NBA draft, and he was selected by the Hawks with the 19th overall pick. I had a few doubts about whether Huerter was ready for the NBA, but Kevin has certainly proved me wrong.
This is the voice of America. Washington, Bob, D.C.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, listeners. By the name Zamiko Apotfazila, Crested Cranes forward and Lady Doves FC Club forward. Listen to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
In soccer news, U.S. Women's National Team head coach Vlatko Andonovski has announced the roster of players headed to the Tokyo Olympics next month. The list includes rising star Rose Lavelle, who helped her team clinch the Women's World Cup in 2019. VOA's Gwen Ooten has an Olympic profile for us. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. American Rose Lavelle is one of the younger players of the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, but her remarkable career has flourished on some of the biggest stages in the sport. In 2019, Lavelle was the breakout star at the FIFA Women's World Cup final in France, where she scored the game-winning goal against the Netherlands to give the United States a record fourth World Cup title. And on Monday, the 26-year-old spoke to Reuters News about how she's grown since the 2019 World Cup, where she earned the bronze ball as the third best player of the tournament.
After the World Cup, people were like, oh, like, how has your life changed? And I think I had thought that, like, after I had accomplished this like huge life goal of mine that I feel so different, but I don't. I just like feel the exact same, like same Rose. So I don't think I've even, I don't know. I don't really like think about it because I don't feel like I'll feel any different.
But with a relentless commitment to self-improvement, Lavelle has transformed her game since she joined Manchester City in the Women's Soccer League in 2020. And although a knee injury kept her sidelined at the start of the season, Lavelle says her time with Man City has made her a better player.
I like am so thankful for Man City and them giving me that opportunity. And I think it has like been the best thing to happen to me. Like happened for my career, and you know I didn't get to play a lot, so that was difficult, but I think I got so much out of it. I met some amazing teammates. I learned so much from the teammates, and being in that training environment, it constantly was pushing me and challenging me and making me uncomfortable, and I think I have grown so much and gotten so much better because of it.
And she continues to grow as part of the U.S. Women's National Team, playing alongside the likes of Carly Lloyd and Megan Rapinoe, athletes Lavelle says she's admired for years.
When I was like in high school and in college, I was still obsessed with the national team. So I was like always watching every single game. So now I'm like playing with the players that I looked up to. People, I mean, like, Carly just hit her 300th cap. She's just like incredible. I think she is like in a league of her own and what she's been able to do, and like how long her career has been and how she has like continued to succeed and succeed and succeed. And, you know, is obviously like incredible on the field, incredible off the field. She's like so fearless in whatever she does. And I just admire that so much about her. Like she's just so unapologetically herself and so confident and assertive, and I like really admire that, and I feel like I need to be a little more like that, so I feel like I can like learn from her.
And now Lavelle is headed to Tokyo, where she hopes to take her game to the next level.
Women's soccer is at a point where there is like so much more talent and depth in every tournament, and it's that much harder to win. So I mean, our group is hard. We have, you know, Sweden, I feel like they've been our kryptonite, and then we have Australia, our former coach is the coach there, and then New Zealand, also another former U.S. national team coach. So I think they're all games that we like can't look past, and they're going to be challenging in their own ways, and I think we have some time to prepare. Hopefully I'm there, but it'll be tough.
The just revealed Olympic roster boasts veterans, including Carly Lloyd, Megan Rapinoe, and Alex Morgan, with championship experience. Kristi Mewes is the only player going to Tokyo who was not part of the 2019 World Cup winning team. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Rose Lavelle and the world champion U.S. Women's National Soccer Team will kick off their Olympic campaign on July 21st in Tokyo, 2 days before the opening ceremony. The American women will play Sweden in their opening match in the 12-team Olympic Women's Tournament. The USA is bidding for its fifth Olympic gold medal in women's football in Japan. The Copper Queens of Zambia are making their first Olympic appearance, and they'll represent Africa in Olympic women's football. The Zambian ladies will play the Netherlands in the opening match for both teams on July 21st. That game will be played in Rifu in Miyagi Prefecture, Japan. And that wraps up the June 23rd edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.